Here's where we left off last week. We were talking about some of the effects of social media. Again, this comes from a longitudinal study. That just means it was a study that was done over many, many years. Probably this lady Twin, she's a PhD professor, I believe up in Michigan somewhere, and she's been tracking and doing a variety of surveys year after year after year of young people, teenager and early college age young people. Involved, she did surveys, and she also did a variety of literally traveling the country, meeting with different teenagers and asking them, interviewing them. So it's a mixed method study of, you know, some qualitative interviews and drawing themes from that, as well as some statistical studies in that. And she came up with these 10 major effects that social media are having on our current generation, and some warnings perhaps of where this could lead us. Again, this isn't a biblical study. This isn't anything spiritual. She's just laying out what she found. And we started talking about some of these already. Number two, internet, which we're going to get to today. We spent a lot of time already discussing some of those statistics and things of how much time these young people are using on the internet. But we'll go back and touch a few things of those. Here's again the list of the 10 things. And I don't know that we're going to have time to get through all 10. We may skip around a little bit and get to some of them here and there. But we wanted to get into the first one, which is in no hurry. In no hurry. We introduced this last week. This is one of the major effects, or a trend that she's seen with social media. And she did a correlation to show that social media is somewhat affecting or causing or influencing or is a factor in some of these trends that are happening in young people today. And one of them is they're extending childhood into adolescence. And we started talking about that last week. They don't want to grow up as quickly as perhaps maybe kids did. Megan was watching an old classic movie last night, and she got my attention because I wasn't really watching it. I was just sitting there kind of dying. She was like, look at this. They flew an 8-year-old boy across the country, and then he got out of the airport by himself, called a taxi, paid for it. This was in an old movie. And if you had a movie like that today, boy, they'd be beating the doors down and saying this is child abuse. But the boy managed to fly across the country. It reminds me of the story we had last summer when we were teaching our lesson on safety. The same thing happened, that they dropped off a 10-year-old boy in the subway system and gave him a map, and he was excited. He wanted to navigate his way home. Boy, there was an outrage like you would not believe. They were calling for the woman to be arrested and all this stuff, that she dare let her child navigate the subway system and show up at home by himself. Well, we're growing up slower. And so it's just baby the little kids and protect them. And I know there needs to be protection. I know there needs to be common sense. I'm not at all advocating. There's a lot of evil people out there. There's bad people out there. We do need to be involved. But at the same time, we also need to let our young people experience some things that they can learn from. It's amazing to me how much young people just don't know how to do. It's amazing to me. I learned how to change the oil in my car when I was a kid in their old Faithful Ranger, because I was sick and tired of stopping at the lube place and dropping $30 to $40 on getting your oil changed. Now, I know it's messy and it's not the funnest job in the world, but you know what? I can go down to Walmart and I can buy a 5-quart or whatever thing of oil, even the good stuff, for about $20, $5 for a filter, and I can get down there and I can undo it. You know, some people, it's like, it ain't worth the $10, I'm done with it, which is fine. But then you know that you did it right, or maybe didn't do it right. I remember one time I forgot to put the oil cap on the motor back on, and I drove my Ranger 3,000 miles, and that cap sat right there and didn't move. The way I drive, I'm shocked that it actually stayed there. And I was like, oh, my oil, let me put that back on. Anyway, I learned how to do those kind of things. And some kids don't have a clue how to do anything. They can't do anything. Everything's done for them. So obviously there's a balance there. But here's some things that she discovered that iGen teens are less likely to do. Some things that they are less likely to do. The first one is experience freedom outside of the house without their parents. You think, well, okay, I understand. Obviously, you want kids to be able to be safe and those kind of things. But kids are just nowhere near. They don't want to go out and do things. They're afraid, or they're just enjoying sitting at home, not worrying about it. They're worried about staring into this, you know, screen and those kind of things. Here's another one. They're less likely to date. I thought that was interesting. Now, I know there's a different, it's up to the parents of when their child should start dating, of course. But kids, you know, it's the fact that they don't even have the desire. Does that make sense? They don't even have the desire to, you know, go out and do this kind of thing. She writes all kinds of funny stories here. And she was talking about in the 1970s, a photograph book of a roller skating rink outside of Tampa where teens are just hanging around, even some of them with lit cigarettes. You know, this is like the 70s, and, you know, maybe a couple of the teenagers kissing, those kind of things. She said that kind of picture, of course, is long gone in our society. Not that we condone those kind of things, but she's just comparing. She was like, the kids even looked kind of adultish. And today you don't even see that. It's just little mambies, as I call them, mamby pambies, walking around wanting mommy to do everything for them. And it's just kind of frustrating to watch. So all of these high school, the statistics still date, but the statistics of how many of them actually go on dates have dropped significantly. 12th graders, for example, back in 1976, like almost 90% of them went out on dates. In 2014-15, that had dropped down to 55% that go out on dates. And I think, okay, I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent. The whole point is they're introverting. They just don't care anymore. They don't care as much for those kind of things anymore. She makes the point of instead of liking someone, it's all about talking. And, of course, the talking is this. So we just text. That's dating. So I'm dating so-and-so because I'm texting on them. And this just cracks me up. I've heard this in high school, and I've literally chewed some kids out of this. I laugh hysterically. So you're texting, and then you know, these relationships in high school, and then one of them comes in. Yeah, I broke up with so-and-so because she cheated on me, and I literally start laughing. I'm like, what do you mean cheated on you? Oh, she texted another boy. Is that your definition of cheating? It is in their minds. Isn't that crazy? I saw him talking to her. She's cheating on me. Now, that's a pretty strong word to use for cheating on somebody. Because cheating on somebody means something totally different. But that's our little kitty kids that are growing up dating on their cell phones. So instead of going out on dates and doing things, they're talking. That's to them what dating is. And again, here's another, again, we don't condone, obviously, this, but she's making a point. Kids today aren't even interested in any of this stuff. They're not entering sexual relationships. Marriage and children are like way far off to them. They don't even want to think about it. Here's an interesting one. I've always liked this one. Getting their driver's license. Now, I know it costs a lot of money. I'm finding that out as my son is now has his license and my insurance bill is like, so I understand sometimes it is not affordable to do that. You know, my dad helped us pay for ours and things like that. And sorry, Seth, he pays half. I think that's pretty fair, don't you? That's more than fair, Mr. Whitney, right? I mean, he should pay all of it, right? But I'm being fair because he's doing me a favor, driving the kids to school. And at 9 o'clock at night when I want ice cream, it's the greatest thing ever. I don't want it, Seth. See you, buddy. I've already got my shoes up. Yep, so do I. Bye, bud. Go get my ice cream or something or whatever it is, you know. But kids aren't even interested in getting their driver's license. I'm going to tell you, I was chomping at the bit. I could not wait to get my driver's license and go speeding down the road. I mean, go driving the speed limit down the road and enjoying all that kind of thing. Parents are still driving these kids around, okay? Parents are driving these kids around, and the kids are cool with it. Now, I'm going to tell you, when I was in high school, and my dad and mom dropped me off at school when I was 18 or 17, I was embarrassed. I was like, Mom, park over here so I can slip out of the car. And all my friends were like, what, you didn't drive today? You know, Adam didn't drive today. He must have got in trouble. You know, all that kind of, like, man, we loved it. We had our old parking spots at school. Megan, you remember all this? We had our parking spots. This was Watt's spot. Nobody parks there. This was Gareth's spot. He had a Trans Am with the eagle on the hood, the real deal, the Firebird. Yeah, he parked there. And, you know, Stephen parked here. We all had our parking spots. It was a big deal. We had our licenses. It was awesome. We would load up. I remember I took Gareth and Stephen and Daniel and Ethan and some of my friends, threw them all on the Explorer. Mom, we're going to Raleigh. Okay, see ya. What? You let your kid drive on the interstate 45 minutes away in heavy traffic in a big city. What are we going to do? We lived. It's shocking that we lived. But, you know, we would go to Myrtle Beach. We had a friend that lived there, and they had one time she had a birthday party, and she invited us all to come there. She was affiliated with our church. Their church was. We drove 2 or 3 hours by ourselves to Myrtle Beach as 16 and 17-year-olds. We didn't have GPS, by the way, and we didn't have cell phones. No cell phone, no GPS. We had a paper map. Now, I'm going to tell you, there is something wrong. Kids cannot read maps today. They have no idea where they are. Sometimes I'll ask Megan if we're driving. I was like, all right, which direction are we going now? Or where are we? Where am I going here? I like doing that with Isaac too, because Isaac never knows where we are. Well, I'm just whatever, I'm just going. He just drives. You know, but reading a map, knowing where you are, we had to do that just paper. I'm going to get to Myrtle Beach. What do I take? I'm going to take this road, then I'm going to take that road. I learned a lot about navigation and direction just by doing that. We used to just load up and we're going to Myrtle Beach with our friends. I mean, that's what we did. But mommy, can you take me to blah, blah, blah? And that's fine if parents want to take them. But you're seeing a big drop in kids just wanting to be independent. Now, I know there's pros and cons with it. Now, again, I know there's a balance in there somewhere. But these kids, like, say, for example, percentage of 12th graders who drove at all in the last year. That means that they just drove once. In 1980, it was at 90% of 12th graders that drove. 2014, it dropped down to almost 70%. And the curve is still going in that direction. So we have nicer vehicles and all these things, but kids just, they just don't care. They don't care enough to want to drive. You know what? I think part of it is they want to be driven around so they can sit in the back seat on this. If I'm driving, I can't be connected to everybody out there. I might miss the Instagram story. I might miss my friend going live. And, you know, you could come to any car line in any school and just watch it. As soon as they get in the car, it's already out. Hardly saying hi to mom. I get on our kids for that sometimes at school. I'm like, y'all need to learn to interact with people. If you're that tied down to have this, that, and the other, you got a problem. You can't even talk to your parents. I told you, I've had kids tell me, yeah, I just, you know, when I get home, I go to my room and I do whatever I want, and internet, YouTube, iPad, whatever. And when it's dinner time, my mom brings me my dinner. Whose fault is that, by the way? Exactly. That's the parent's fault. What do you expect the kid to do? He's going to do it if you let him. It's in his heart. He needs Christ. So there's no training. There's no development with that. Anyway, we're getting off this. Some of these here. My parents drove me everywhere, never complained, so I always had rides because the parents loved to do it. Oh, yeah, let me take you. They're so concerned about the safetyism of it. She says, by 18, most of my friends had a license and cars, but I was still not in a hurry. I didn't get my license until my mom told me I had to because she couldn't keep driving me to school. She finally got it months after her 18th year, and the parents had to keep nagging some of these. You know, one of them was like, told his parents, hush, I don't want to get my license and those kind of things. You know, we wanted to get our license, again, as we said, and you could go into all this things and all of what we used to do, I guess. Maybe I shouldn't harp on that. But it's just totally different for these teens these days. Parents are still driving around. Parents are cool with it. So why should the kid even try to get his license? I mean, I don't know. What happened to getting your license and trying to get a sports car? You know? I know, blah, blah, blah. But there's just something about that. You know, we wanted to get a sports car and my dad would never let me. I don't know why. But he's like, here, drive this. It's slow. But, you know, we like that. One of my friends, I said he had a Trans Am. That thing, that was awesome. We used to go take that thing out and drive. It was fun. And kids were like, I want to sit at home because I've got my phone. If I'm driving, I'm not on it. It's just a totally different mindset of things that are going on. Let's go to a couple other things here. They're less likely also to become a latchkey kid. You ever heard of that? What's a latchkey kid? A latchkey is a person that walks home or goes home from school by themselves and uses their key to go into the house. You know, a latchkey. They're responsible and old enough to let themselves in and out of their house. There's a lot less latchkey kids in our society today. You know, parents are still working or whatever. Some kids did so as early as second grade. By middle school and high school, it was taken for granted. Back in, let's see, the 1990s, 8th and 10th graders who spent time at home after school without an adult was over almost 80%. Now it's dropped down to in the 70s, and it's continuing to drop more. That's just middle school, 8th, 9th, and 10th graders, basically. So it's less likely that, oh, we don't want them. We talk about this with the safetyism issue and all that, but we don't want them to be on their own, independent. Oh, what? They're going to be home by themselves with a key. Are they responsible? Some of these kids aren't responsible enough because parents haven't trained them to be responsible. Some of these kids, you don't want to give them a latch key. They can't handle it. But that goes back to we didn't train them. We didn't train them. So now we can't give them the responsibility. Here's a good one. Work a job to earn money. I've never in my life seen kids that want something just given to them. It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. When I was young, especially when I got into college, if there was a chance to work, I was disappointed when Dad said, yeah, we don't have anything. I don't need you Saturday. Oh, man. I could have gotten 8 hours on Saturday because I don't have school. I could have made, I could have made some serious money. Man, I used to get irritated at that. He's like, sorry, we don't have any work. Man, today he's like, oh, yes. I didn't work for 3 weeks. Hey, Mom, I need some money. It gets harder and harder to find kids that actually know how to work. I'm sure Whitney sees that a lot in the concession stand. He has to stay on some. Most of our kids actually do a pretty good job, and they get in there and they get the job done. But every now and then you get some that are... I like it when I walk in and there's nobody at the window and the kids are cleaning or doing something without being told. Then occasionally you'll walk in and there's nobody to serve and they're just sitting on the... And I just walk in and say, hey, you're on the clock. You know that, don't you? What? Find something to do. I remember Ms. Watkins, she used to make them go clean the bathrooms and go scrub. They didn't like it as much, but hey, they were working. They're on the clock. You know what you're doing? If you're not working and you're getting paid for it, you know what you're doing? You're stealing. You're a thief. Oh, don't you dare talk like that about my kid. Well, I'm sorry, he's a thief. He's going to grow up and be a lazy bum. I hate to say it. I'm of the mentality that when you're working, you go 150,000%. You go as quick as you can, the best you can, and you do the best job you can while you're doing it. But we've long gone from that. So teenagers, you know, again, they talk about all the things that if a kid wanted something, they'd go make the money for it. Go push a lawnmower around or whatever. Ask to do odd jobs or anything like that to get some money. I was very thankful for some of our high school students. They, when I asked them, if they would consider giving $5 a piece to the My Father's Arrows. So there's 45, 50 of y'all. If we each give five, we can probably get around $200. Some of them didn't have money, and they went to one of our teachers and said, can I clean your room top to bottom, spick and span for $5? She said, sure. Stayed after school for a couple hours, cleaned the room, spotless. Gave her $5, turned it into the kids. Now, that's good. That's encouraging. That's people, oh, work to get money, to either help people, or even just to get something I want. You know, hey, I remember being a kid wanting to save up for something. Not any of y'all know what I'm talking about. You saved up for something. Saved and saved. And Seth's been saving for years, and his dad doesn't let him buy it. Sorry, bud. Son, you need to save your money. Don't buy that. Yeah, but I worked hard at Gators. I haven't even bought myself anything. I'm mean, aren't I, Bill? I guess. I don't know. But I'll let him get something one day, I think. But, you know, you say, I want to buy that. So I'm going to work to get it. Our kids aren't like that these days. I don't understand why my parents won't get that for me. I deserve it. That's as bad as when I told my brother and I tried to tell my dad and mom one time that we had rights. Well, that did not end well. I learned to not ever say that again, ever. Anyway, she does all the statistics that teenage work is declining. It's declining. I know there's other things that kids are doing, but I tell you, even if you find one that does work, half the time they don't know how. It's very discouraging. Well, I did that. That wore me out. I'll go over here and do this. I don't. I'm wired differently, I guess. I don't know. My dad would have beat me to a pulp. I guess that's maybe what it is. Again, it goes back to what? Probably parenting. What it goes back to. And part of training our children in the way they should go is to work. Why the decline in work? You know, people argue that, there's more academics. The academics are more demanding, so kids are studying more. That's one of the excuses that some of these researchers have given. But the study actually shows that there's been no rise in extracurricular activities, and there's actually been showed in the studies that there is less time spent on homework than in the 90s. So kids are spending less time on extracurricular activities like sports and things like that at school or band or whatever, and they're having less homework, and they're still not working. It's a little bit of a troubling thing. One of the ladies that, or one of the girls that she talked about, she said, I talked to one of these teenagers at her, see, most teen jobs are low-skilled work that don't necessarily prepare young people for the higher-level jobs they will have later. She says, my students told me they've worked folding clothes at The Gap or stocking shelves at Target or cleaning the bathroom at Bath & Body Works. Although they learn some customer service skills, such jobs are very different from the white-collar professions most will pursue once they graduate from college. Jobs can also keep teens from getting the sleep they need. This is kind of the arguments that you use. And although homework time doesn't seem to be preventing the average teen from working, teens who work long hours often find it difficult to complete their schoolwork. So that's one side of the argument. Then she said, however, if teens don't learn high-level skills from their jobs, they often learn the value of responsibility and money. Maybe cleaning a toilet at Bed Bath & Beyond isn't going to teach you a high skill, but it'll teach you responsibility and how to handle money. I remember one of my first jobs outside of working with my dad. I worked for a man, still a really good friend of mine to this day. He was a tile layer, probably one of the best tile work I've ever seen. This guy was amazing, did multi-million homes and all this stuff. And I'm going to tell you, that was hard work. Carrying boxes of tile up and down stairs out of his truck, mixing up thin set, chopping screed. Oh, I don't ever want to chop screed the day. It's awful in 110 degree heat. It was hard work. I remember my first paycheck. It was like $200-something. Man, I made like $6 an hour. I thought it was the top of the line. You know, $6 an hour. It was amazing. And I remember I wanted these basketball shoes. And I got my first paycheck, so I said, I was only like 15. I said, Mom, next time you go to the mall, let me take them with you. I've been saving up and want these basketball shoes. And I couldn't believe how fast that $200 went. Buddy, I learned something quick right there. And I was like, ooh, that went quick. I don't have any money left. How am I going to go buy a Frosty at Wendy's? I don't have any money. And so I learned to kind of not go out and just spend all my paycheck and things like that. So you learn responsibility and money. She said, Vicky, a 22-year-old student, She said her parents didn't want her to work in high school, so looking for a job when she went to college was a rude shock. No one would hire me due to my lack of experience. And even when I finally did get a job, I wasn't acting in a professional manner on the job and ended up getting fired. She said, if I had worked in high school, regardless of where it was, I would have known how to behave on a job. So when they protect, put them in the real world, they don't know how to act. They don't know what to do. Another thing, kids are less likely to manage an allowance. How many of you got an allowance when you were a kid? Anybody get an allowance? No? I did. We got an allowance. We had to do certain jobs to get it. I remember, you know, I used to watch Andy Griffith where, you know, he'd give Opie, a quarter every week or something. And then the one time he wanted to raise his, the other boy said he could. And so he tried to throw a temper tantrum. Remember that one? And he's rolling around on the floor and Andy's like, what are you doing? I'm throwing a temper tantrum. He said, well, don't get your clothes all dirty. You know, the classic stuff there. And my parents would, especially when we started driving, they would help us out. We had to do jobs around the house, of course. I washed, my mom still to this day doesn't have a dishwasher. I've washed a lot of dishes in my life. I won't tell Bill that, and maybe I'll end up doing it at Gators. But I've washed a lot of dishes, and we used to mop the floor, vacuum the floor, clean. We had to do all that stuff for Mom. But she would give us, every couple weeks, $20 to fill up the Ford Explorer that we had. Now, $20 back then, $99 to $1.05 a gallon. You could fill the thing up and go, you know, for a couple weeks. So she said, you're driving back and forth to school, we'll help you with the gas. But if you want to go anywhere else that cost over that, you got to put the gas in yourself. So if we wanted to go on a Raleigh trip with our friends or something, we had to fork out our own money. And she would give us a little bit of spending money every couple weeks. And we had to manage that. We had to manage it. Oh, but man, maybe I shouldn't buy that because then I won't have food or this. How am I going to manage my $10 that I have to have? Today, it's just whatever, Mom. Hey, Mom, I need more money in my account. Thanks. Slide. That's what these kids have, these debit cards, and their parents can add money into it. And I've been to many, you know, like at the basketball games or something. They're like, oh, I'm almost out of money in my account. Well, why did you buy that? Oh, because I wanted it. And they're calling Mom. Mom, I need another $20 in my account so I can buy dinner. Okay, sweetie. We haven't learned how to manage money. And that's another part of the problem. I mean, that's one of the things with an allowance. Teens just get what they want when they want it rather than receiving an allowance and having to manage it to make sure it lasts and they can save up for something. Now, if you don't do allowances with your kids, that's fine. I don't give my kids allowances because I don't know, never have. Maybe I should teach them how to manage their money a little bit better. When they do a little job here and there. And Jared started refereeing soccer this year, so he got paychecks. And I'm on him like white on rice about spending it, aren't I? Dad, I really want this. I said, no. But it's my money. I don't care. You're not buying it. But it's... Sorry. And he gets old. And I said, especially around Christmas, when it's hard enough to figure out what to buy these teenagers, Then they want to buy it for themselves. You know, tell your aunts to buy that for you or your grandma. Anyway, so saving up and learning how to let things last. Next thing here, real quick. I know this sounds strange, and this is probably a good thing, right? Teenagers are less likely to drink alcohol. You think, well, that's good. It is. Sure, it's good. But the point she's making is that these teenagers are waiting a long, long time. And then she brings out some very interesting statistics. I'm going to read some of them. It's a problem. In 1993, 85% of 12th graders, 72% of 10th graders, 58% of 8th graders had tried alcohol in 1993. In 2061, it went from 85% to 61% of 12th graders, 72% of 10th graders down to 42%, and from 58% of 8th graders down to 22%. Pretty good. Okay, they're not drinking as much. And she's like, she's not arguing that that's a good or a bad thing. Again, she's purely secular in this. She's just laying out the statistics. But she said one of the problems that is happening is that these kids are then going to college and they're just going nuts. And they're binge drinking and killing themselves. Not that she's condoning they start drinking alcohol. But again, it's the whole concept of don't do anything. Sit in your room on your device. Don't go out with your friends. Don't do anything. Don't go drive. Don't get your license. Don't get an allowance. Don't do anything. Don't get a job. Don't let yourself in and out of your house. Don't try anything. Just sit at home by yourself and turn inward. Turn inward. Some of the problems that she's recognizing here. Childhood has lengthened with teens treated as children. Now, you shouldn't be treating a 17-year-old as an 8-year-old. You shouldn't. They should be at the point, if you've trained them right, that they should be able to take responsibility. They should be able to handle having a device and being trustworthy with it. Now, you have to check on it. But they should be if you've trained them right. You should be able to say, hey, I need you to run and take care of these things, and they should be able to get in their car and go do it. They should be able to. But no, we're treating them like 8-year-olds. And so we're extending the childhood for as long as possible. And people are happy about it. A few things here. Some of the reasons. We talked about this last week. But the slow life strategy. The slow life strategy because of this focus on individualism. Each child is cultivated to succeed. Each child is noticed. Each child is celebrated. So why should there be any hurry to grow up? We want to celebrate every single child. And this is the kind of the thing she's talking about. We're an individualistic culture. And so parents are focusing on every individual child very intently. We don't want them to grow up. We want to take care of everything for them instead of the slow life strategy. Or I mean, the other life strategy we talked about last week where, you know, you needed to learn how to get out there and work because we're not going to survive. We got to get out there and do the farm or whatever it may be. Totally different type of society. Another thing is psychology. You know, maybe they would grow up faster if they were given the responsibilities. Parents think then that their kids are biologically programmed to make poor choices. We should protect them as long as possible because they're using psychology. They're biologically programmed to do make wrong actions. No, we're sinfully programmed to do wrong actions because of our sin nature. So we're turning to psychology instead of turning to the Bible and training a child in the biblical principles so that when they grow up, they know what is right and wrong. So when they're out with their friends or they're about to buy something or they're on their device, they know this is right, that's wrong. This is right, that's wrong. And they can discern and make decisions. But we've thrown the Bible out a long time ago, replaced it with psychology. So that's part of it. Now, teens and parents, you know, they're basically on the same page. Teens and parents are on the same page. They're on the same page of growing up slowly. The parents are good with it. The teens are good with it. So the psychologists convince society that teens are not ready to grow up. Constant monitoring through technology and the comfort and security of home. All of these things have contributed. They're embracing the overprotection. A few things that she points out here that I wanted to mention. I alluded to this briefly last week. She says, even once they get to college, they're in college now. Students' parents continue to treat them like children. Parents register their adult children for classes. Parents remind them of their deadlines. Parents wake them up for class in time. Cell phones made that easy. Students said, these students weren't mortified when their parents did all this as my generation and the ones before it would have been. If my mom went into the registrar's office to register my classes, I'd have been embarrassed. I'm going to tell you right now, I'd have said, what are you doing? Get out of here. She says, we were mortified if our parents did that. This generation is grateful. Grateful to be able to communicate with a parent multiple times a day. In the dorm, in the dining halls, in the student union, going to class, going to another class, going somewhere after class, in the lobby of the advising office, even in my office, or they tried to. It's my mom, they'd say sheepishly with a small shrug. Do you mind if I just get this? I'll just... Mom? In a meeting with a professor. Gotta talk to mommy. That's sickening to me. I'm sorry. That's ridiculous. We're all 18, 19 years old, and mommy's got to go register for my classes. Grow up. You're an adult now. And I've told you about one of my friends. He said it is more every year how many parents call him about a student's grades. Why are you talking to me? Your child is an adult. Thank you. I know parents are helping pay for bills and all those kind of things, but I'm going to tell you. She's just appalled. Said, this generation doesn't rebel against the overprotection. Does that make sense? Man, I was mad if my mom was trying to, you know, of course she was snooping for the right reasons, you know, but it'd make you upset. Mom, leave me alone. I'm over here with my friends, you know, or whatever. Mom, don't embarrass me and all that kind of stuff. These kids are like running to mommy. Yay! And all those kind of things. They embrace it. It says, we want you to treat us like children, not adults, one college student told a startled faculty member. We want you to treat us like children. Some suggest that this cocoon mentality is behind the recent campus trends like trigger warnings and safe spaces and all those kind of things, which it is. So they embrace the overprotection. They embrace it. What are they doing if they aren't doing homework or drinking or dating or driving? What are they doing? Look right here and you'll find out. Their whole world, that's the point of her study. Their whole world is here. Right here. And this is the generation that we're growing up with. I don't know. When I was in college, it was sink or swim. I mean, Dad was like, well, see you, bud. Now, if I needed help and I was struggling financially and I needed to borrow some money from him or something until I could pay him back, he would do that for me. He would help me if I needed it. That was great. It was kind of him. But I mean, I had to work. I had to work. You know, I think that it's, again, you may disagree, that's fine. But I think it's wonderful for kids to go to college and work. Yeah, but their studies might suffer. Work. My last year of college, it was a 168 credit degree, so it was a 5-year program. I just married Megan, took 21 credits a semester and worked 40 hours a week. That was hard. Getting home at midnight and locking myself in my office for 2 or 3 hours, and then getting up at 8, 7 and doing it again. That was hard. But I want to tell you, it helped me. I'm going to call my dad. Maybe he'll pay my bills for me while I'm in college. And again, I know it's great that parents can help their kids. Don't take me wrong on that. It's wonderful that that can happen. But I'm going to tell you, there's also something to be said about working through school and having a little bit of ownership for that. And a lot of you, you know, a lot of our kids do that. It's amazing to me how they manage it all and get it and do it. It's great. It's good for them. It's wonderful. But anyway, we're changing. We're changing. So these kids want to be in mommy, doing everything for them, registering for their classes, doing it all. Now, it's one thing to get advice from mom and dad. That's great. But when we're going to just mom, do everything for me, or dad, take care of all this for me, time we needed to grow up just a little bit. And that's the problems that she's seeing. And she's seeing this in secular universities. This is where she works, in secular universities. This is what she's seeing, and it's frightening to her. But we'll pick up there. Next week, we're going to talk about a little bit more of the internet that they're using and those kind of things. And then we'll get into some other issues there as well. Father, thank you for the time this morning. Thank you for, again, the study that we're doing here. I pray it would help us to learn to train up our children in the way they should go and teach them responsibility. Lord, help when we can. And there's a balance there, Father. There truly is. And help us to be wise as parents and help with that balance and help when we can. But then, Lord, also have our young people learning responsibility. Help them in the future. And Father, I pray that you would just bless now our morning worship time for your honor and glory. In Christ's name, amen. All right, thank you.